WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Mularkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Oh, we've made it to a Friday. It is the It's Your Turn program on WISR 680 AM. Thank you for joining us, Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Mularkey for one last day.
We're still standing.
We have still made it. Compliments to Dave.
It takes two of us to do his job.
And so he will be returning on Monday, but we're giving the people an opportunity to call us at 724-283-2525 to kick off the program. We started the week with an open talk, so now we're going to end the week with an open talk. Coming up later on in the program, Larry Stock of Butler County Community College will join us. He'll be bringing at least one cast member along from their upcoming production, and so we'll chat with Larry about that at 1. And then at 1:30, we're going to be talking with Jack Cohen. He's the president of the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau, and Fred Caesar. He's a member of a number of boards in Saxonburg, as well as a board member for the Tourism and Convention Bureau, as well as being the Butler Radio Network's voice of the Germany trip, because these two gentlemen are going to come in. We're going to talk about their trip to Mühlhausen, Germany.
And it's a sister city of Saxonburg, if you didn't know that. They've had something in the works for a decade or so, but this is the first time they really put a contingency together to go over to Germany. It was really cool to have Fred be over there and like be our eyes and ears and send us back reports and pictures. So you'll probably, once he starts talking, you'll recognize his voice from, I think we had a report for him for 7 days in a row when they were over there. So it's pretty neat.
So we'll talk with them, and that'll be at 1:30. But again, we're kicking off the Friday edition of It's Your Turn with some open talk. So again, feel free to give us a call, 724-283-2525. It's open to any topic that you may be wanting to think of. As always, we're going to be throwing some topics out there, but feel free to begin the conversation and start the conversation the way that you want to. But we're going to start the conversation with Hurricane Florence. Obviously, that has been the main news topic going on, and justifiably so. The impact that this has had, obviously, downgraded category-wise, but as I was talking with Kate this morning on Coffee with Kate, that's not necessarily a I hate saying not a good barometer, because it is, but at the same time, the wind isn't necessarily what causes a lot of the damage, and especially the death toll. When you're looking at deaths in hurricane, I saw the statistic today in the Associated Press, 8% of hurricane deaths are related to the category. So we're talking wind. Only 8% of those deaths are attributed to wind. The others are a combination of other factors, but the leading one is the storm surge. So when that initially hits the coast, and that's when you get the water, that's what gets people in trouble.
Yeah, people drown.
Yeah.
I did see some calls for the National Weather Service and NOAA to redo, in a sense, how they categorize hurricanes. Because I don't like it, to be honest, because especially when a storm is out at sea and there's nothing blocking it, obviously it's stronger. And then when it comes in towards the coast, it slows it down. So, but to the average person, when you hear a category 4 and then you say, oh, now it's only a category 1, I think it gives false hope, I guess, in a sense, to people. I think they should come up with a new system that includes the storm surge, how much flooding, rainfall amounts, you know, and that sort of thing. But I want to hear from people. I know a lot of people from this area go to the Outer Banks every year. A lot of people own properties down there. Maybe they've retired down there and spend half the year down there. I don't know if anybody wants to share their stories, if they know how their properties are, if they've had to cancel a vacation. I personally know two people. One was down here, or was down there. It was supposed to be last Saturday to this Saturday to tomorrow, and they had to evacuate on Wednesday and make that drive back. And then another family friend was supposed to leave tomorrow to go down to the Nag's Head area. They obviously had to cancel everything. Some people in the party are hoping to still get down there by next week. I don't think that's a good idea, because you know how long it takes to get. They said power outages might linger for a week or so, and that just might be them being positive. But
Yeah.
You know, it's affected a lot of people's vacations.
It really has. And obviously, you feel concerned for the people who are living
sure,
down there
first
primarily.
And foremost.
But, you know, at the same time, someone is taking this was their allotted week to get away from it all. I mean, I think we
one
all.
1 week a year,
yeah,
a lot of times.
You all. Most people who are in the workforce value that 1 week where they get to go to the beach, where they spend time with friends and family, mm-hmm. and it's the highlight of their, if not year, the summer at mm-hmm. least. I know that's the case with us. And in our particular case, we go to Topsail Island, North Carolina, which is about an hour south of the Outer Banks. And so this is right in the throes of,
yeah,
of the
I
middle
saw a camera
of Hurricane Florence.
From
yeah.
Topsail.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. So
mm-hmm.
Any...
You really couldn't tell. You just saw the trees going back and forth and the wind uh-huh. whipping around.
And so there's, like you said, I think a number of vacation spots in the Carolinas where, you know, naturally anybody on the East Coast is going to go. But I know there's a number of people, at least even in the Butler area, that have vacationed to Topsail mm-hmm. Island that I talked to. And so those are areas that are being hit by Hurricane Florence. And obviously this is packing a very large punch. But something you and I talked about, too, at least from our perspectives as reporters and people in the radio industry and in the news industry, some people look at the reporters who are out there in the middle of the storm and they go, what the heck are you doing? And mm-hmm. justifiably so in some particular cases. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, do we really need five different correspondents in the same city? It is just whipping winds mm-hmm. and rain. I do think there is some value to be taken of actually seeing that because even if it was 40, 50 years ago, and maybe the callers can talk to us a little bit about news coverage of hurricanes back then. But to me, it paints a picture that unless you experienced it firsthand, you wouldn't know what it's like otherwise. And so when it affects you, or even when it comes to sympathizing with the people who are experiencing it, I think it does give you an opportunity to go, this is nasty. If this ever happens to me, I'm getting out.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree with you. I mean, this, like you said, a lot of us, thankfully, won't ever have to experience this.
Yes.
So to see, I mean, we don't know what it would feel like to be standing there in 70 mile per hour sustained winds mm-hmm. and a gust comes, a 90 mile per hour gust comes, and you see it knock the reporter, you know, down a little bit. We just don't know what that feels like. So I appreciate the coverage. I mean,
yeah.
I think especially these are the major networks that are doing this, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't their first rodeo. They've done this before. They take precautions. It's not like they're throwing their employees out there like, well, have fun. You know, here's a rain jacket. They're not doing that. I mean, they've been doing this for decades and decades. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be interesting, and I know some of the networks have started to do this, but when this is all over, kind of taking a peek into this is how we do it. This is where we stay. This is how we eat. This is where we sleep. Mm-hmm. Just stuff like that. I know I was watching one live shot this morning, and the girl was saying, listen, I have a producer on both sides of me watching to see if something's going to hit me in the face.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about all that flying debris and, you know, tree limbs and parts of roofs. And she said, honestly, there's two people standing here so I can talk to the camera and not have to be turning side to mm-hmm. side. So they are taking precautions. I mean, I know the memes are funny when you're holding on to
yeah.
the railing and you're like, it's windy out here. Well, we can clearly see that it is windy. But I do like the coverage.
I do too. And I think if it's done, like you said, in a responsible manner, and these are veterans who have a lot of dollars behind them, just in terms of, you mentioned the CBSs, the NBCs, CNNs,
Weather Channel.
ABCs, whoever it is, you know they're going to be taking the utmost precautions because they do have the funds to do it. But like I said, I think it does serve a valuable purpose. And like you said, there are the funny clips where, you know, they cut to, okay, let's go to Tom. He's on the shores in the Outer Banks.
Yeah.
And you
can't
even understand a word he's saying. And then you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. We couldn't really hear Tom, but you can really get a good idea of what the wind and rain are like. Oh, well, thank you. I didn't know that. So I do think there is some value to it. I think at times it may be overdone, but I do think it serves a purpose. So from at least our perspective, you know, I think that's the way we look at it, and maybe that's just the part of the reason why we got into the news
yeah,
industry.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a worthy cause.
Yeah, I know people get annoyed by the coverage, but as you were saying too earlier this morning, it I don't really think you can overhype a hurricane, because I know
no.
I've seen that being tossed around on social media, saying the media is overhyping. I mean, this thing is deadly, whether it's a category 4, 2, 1. I mean, I understand what they're saying, not to get out there and be like, the world's ending. I mean,
yeah.
we understand that that's not happening. But, I mean, people's lives are at stake, and it affects so many people that I think it I don't think you can really overhype it in a sense.
I completely agree with you. I think when it comes, there is, I think, logistical frustrations that can happen by evacuating areas, evacuating states to try to get people to move. I mean, you're talking about taking a large chunk of a population and saying, all right, find a place to go to. That's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I understand the idea of being the captain of your ship. You want to go down with the house. You bought this house. You've maintained this house. You've maintained the property. You want to see this through. I understand all of that. Now, being someone that lives in Western PA, again, as you mentioned, not something that we would have to deal with or very rarely be faced with a particular scenario mm-hmm. where you would have to evacuate your home. So it may be easier for us to play judge and jury from the Northeast as opposed to being down south. But I would just imagine that if a hurricane is coming and it could potentially bring that much damage, again, the items, although valuable, are not irreplaceable.
Right, they're just items.
Yeah, so I don't think the media can overhype a natural disaster because I do think it, like you said, it can be deadly. Lives are at stake, and mm-hmm. if it's not getting the proper coverage it deserves, then I think the people would turn around and then go, why didn't you tell us it was going to happen? And so it's kind of playing at both sides. I think you would rather be overly cautious than underprepared.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think we'll see, you know, in the days to come how much flooding, like you said, that really seems to be the primary concern. I remember for Harvey last year, it's amazing too what we can do with all this equipment. I know CNN was broadcasting live where helicopters, they actually had a reporter in one mm-hmm. of the helicopters, they were rescuing people from their rooftops after Harvey. So hopefully that won't happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen. It's just incredible to see what Mother Nature can do. I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. I'm kind of a dork in that sense. I've been watching it, and I'll probably go home and watch it throughout the day because I just think it's insane. And especially, did you see any of the coverage in the eye of the hurricane this morning?
So that's like, it's always just, eerie.
It gets so calm, and mm-hmm. it's so interesting to me that. And you know that more is coming. You went through half of it.
Yeah.
You're in the center, and you're about to be whipped with the second half. But just Mother Nature's a beast.
It really is. We've seen, I mean, not obviously to any certain extent to what they're getting in the Carolinas, but, I mean, the weather that we experienced on Sunday, I can honestly tell you this past Sunday, I haven't seen an all-day rain like that in a long time. Like, when you take a look at really what was Saturday morning the whole way through Monday morning, of just the consistent amount of rain that we got. I mean, obviously, the rain total showcased it anywhere between 5 to 8 inches in Western PA. That's a ton of rain. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing what that can do.
Yeah, but I think that makes it easier for me to empathize with what they're going through because, okay, we got 5 to 8. Some of the places down there are going to get 40,
yeah.
4-0. And you saw we had 12 or 13 water rescues in the county mm-hmm. because of the 5 to 8 inches. So I think it's like, wow, well, that puts it into perspective.
It really does. And if you want to join in on our conversation, 724-283-2525 is our number. We're in the open talk portion of It's Your Turn. Tyler Friel and Kayla Molzan with you. We're going to pause for a break. We'll come back and do a little more It's Your Turn open talk right here on WISR 680 AM.
Dr. William Saar of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Come fall, Dale's mind wanders toward the woods. I want the rest of him to follow, but his ankle wouldn't allow it. With the latest technology and our talented caring team, we were able to get him back out there. It's about improving the quality of people's lives every day, and Dale is proof.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back to the It's Your Turn program, listeners. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Malarkey, the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We are in open talk, 724-283-2525, your opportunity to get involved in our conversation. Coming up later on in the program, we'll be talking with Larry Stock of BC3 about their upcoming production, and then we'll be chatting with Jack Cohen and Fred Caesar of the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau about their trip to Mühlhausen, Germany. I don't know much German. What foreign language did you take?
Oh, gosh. My foreign language career was very limited. I say this all the time. I truly believe that some people's brains are wired to learn another language and some aren't. And mine is definitely not. It was so hard for me. I know.
What did you take?
At Butler, well, you used to do you get like little snippets of all the languages.
Growing up through?
Yeah, going okay. up through. And then I decided on Spanish. Took, by the time of high school and college, probably took 5 years. Couldn't say a sentence.
Not a word.
It was so tough for me. And then for a little, I did a little jaunt into Latin for a
semester. Which I studied for 6 years.
For a semester. But then the class, I ended up dropping the class after 2 weeks. So it was just, I only got 2 weeks worth of Latin.
I took Latin in 7th and 8th grade, and I went to Butler Catholic School. And there was a priest who was at St. Michael's at the time, Father Dolan. Father Dolan had the ability to speak, I'm not joking, I believe 6 to 7 different languages.
My gosh.
He knew them by heart. He was one of the more scholarly people I've ever been around. So 7th grade Latin, I remember getting assigned day one of 7th grade, here's a paragraph, translate this, and have it for tomorrow.
Well, how would you know how to do that?
That's how much he jumped right into it. He was from like basically a theologian background where this is what you do. And
you're like,
so
listen, I'm 13. I can barely speak English.
I'm pretty sure I broke down in tears. I'm like, I can't do this. This is a difficult. And so I ended up doing it for 2 years. And then I went to.
It took you 2 years to translate that one paragraph.
So I did Latin for 2 years. I mean, it got to the end of it where I was saying, singing the Hail Mary. We studied the Latin Mass, which is extremely bizarre as a Catholic growing up to see how the Masses were done prior to, the 1960s is, maybe a caller can help me out on that, when the Latin Mass transferred over to the regular Mass. Either way, we studied that. Like, we studied all of these different things. And I was, by the time I got into 9th grade, I felt like this Latin scholar. And I know I could have tested out of it, but I got to the high school and they said, no, you got to follow this path. And so they sent me back to do 2 years of what I had already done, which kind of set me back. Like, I got off track. But it wasn't as hard. Of a class, it wasn't anything. I mean, my teacher was this scholar of different nature. I mean, I had good teachers, but same thing. I cannot retain any Latin. And
did it help you with vocabulary, though? Because they say it does.
It does, but the biggest thing that they always, to me, was the big selling point of Latin is it would help you on your SATs. They said it would help you on your SATs. I never took my SATs.
Really?
It was never something that I needed to do. And so,
little known fact,
I did not take my SATs, and so I never got to utilize it to the certain extent. So now I'm just one of those like classic liberal arts graduates that he took 6 years of Latin and has no applicable skills for them whatsoever. Anyways, what was my point? I don't think I had one. No, we were just talking about the German guest. No, I did not take German. I know there were a few people who did.
Yes. I am anxious to hear from Jack Cohen from the Tourism Bureau and Fred Caesar. They'll help rein us in and tell us about their trip.
The wheels have fallen off here on the Friday edition of the program.
I do. We are in an open talk period. Yes. So if you would like to call us and tell us how annoying you think we are or the opposite, we'll take it. 724-283-2525, 283-2525. I want to talk about something that really is getting a huge reaction on our social media pages. This morning I was working on a story. Apparently a new trampoline park is coming into the Clearview Mall.
Big news,
it's a two-sided story. A, that it's a new type of business coming in. And B, something's coming to the Clearview Mall, because if you've driven there lately, you know, or if you walk through the mall lately, you know that there's not as many stores as there used to be, we'll say.
That may be a nice way to put it.
But I did get it confirmed this morning that it's an altitude trampoline park. That's the company. They have locations throughout the country, one in Pennsylvania so far near the Philadelphia area. They are planning the Butler location, a Pittsburgh location, and one other ones. But a lot of people talking about this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we have our first caller on Open Talk. Hello, caller. Welcome to the It's Your Program. It's Your Turn program. Go right ahead. Hello.
I want to talk about this. If you're afoot on the streets, you can't cross the street without dodging cars. Nobody stops for the red lights. They don't stop for the cross bells. You know, that turn right on red, that was the dumbest thing they ever come up with.
Are you talking about walking, are you walking in the city of Butler around Main Street?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you noticed you've been having to dodge cars more frequently than in the past, or has it always been a problem for you?
Well, ever since they come up with that turn right on red, you can't cross the street. People don't stop for the lights. They just keep on going.
I know there's a lot of people who use that right on red as a yield, as more than come to a complete stop,
right,
sit there for 5 seconds and make sure you look both ways, look for pedestrians, and then if it's completely clear, then you can go. But I would agree with you. I think there's this impatience and some radical driving, as well as distracted drivers out there as well.
And then the cross bells, you don't, what is it, 6 o'clock or something, they shut off?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. Hmm.
Yeah, sometime in the evening, unless there's something going on, you know, and then sometimes they still don't work, but they cut them off, so you can sit there, you can stand there and punch that button until you turn blue, and the thing never comes on, so you're still crossing at your own risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. I know could be affecting a lot of people, with more people going on Main Street nowadays.
Yeah.
More restaurants, more breweries, more things to do, more people are walking around.
I think observing the
dangerous
speed limit and following
distracted driving
lights,
like you said. I think it's just people, we have no patience anymore. We have to get to from point A to point B as fast as we can,
mm-hmm,
and that's not a good scenario.
There's no consideration. There's no integrity. No nothing.
Yeah, it's always it's only like what we have to do, like get out of our way. And I hope it stops, but I don't see it stopping anytime soon. Thanks, caller, for sharing your thoughts. We appreciate it. It is interesting, though, because I think I hear this on a day-to-day basis, just the distracted driving and the aggressive driving.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how can I get, and it's not like I'm immune to it. I mean, I have done it. But it just, is it going to stop? I mean, it's not going to. These new cars now have so many things on the dashboard. It's like, how could you not be distracted?
Well, I said this when I was looking for, I just bought a new car.
Right, right.
And I said, I've driven out when I was test driving vehicles and looking at all these different things. I realized how much I disliked the screen on the car. And I know as a younger person, I should be embracing new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some cool safety features that new vehicles have. One of the really cool ones I have seen is the blind spot detection light on side mirrors, which is really cool because it shows you.
So it just lights up if something's
there. Yeah, it lights
there
up. There's a little light. It lights up if there's a blind spot, someone mm-hmm in your blind spot, which is really neat. But I have driven in cars and I find myself looking at the screen, looking at whatever I can, you know, what's next, what's new, different things like that. Where am I at on the road? So when I was buying a car, first of all, I just wanted things that I can press. I like pressing buttons. Why? Because buttons, they work. Like you never
instead
have
of
to,
a screen
instead
where you
of
just touch
a screen where you touch the screen and you're trying to like toggle a menu to get to see if you can get, you know, where you want the heater to go, like to get from hot to cold. You got to touch a screen and you're sitting there. It's like working on, it's working your phone on the dashboard, and they're saying don't text and drive. But if you want to get your if you want to get the heat up, you got to take, you got to press menu, you got to go down to heat, the heating section, knobs. I want knobs and buttons. I know that's such a throwback, you know, thing to say.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners agree with you, though.
Yeah, I like the volume on the steering wheel and for me to change my channels there. Mm-hmm. I like that ability. But I love just a small screen with buttons and knobs.
Yeah.
And that's why I got that car.
I mean, I think if some of these vehicles, which are beautiful vehicles, but they basically have an iPad or a tablet on their dashboard. I mean, how could that physically not be distracting? It just it just the way how we're programmed to look at screens. I mean, it just
That happens to me if I go to a sporting event. For some reason, here I am, paid all this money to go to a game. Especially this happens to me at football. I will sit there and then boom, I just look up at the screen.
I know.
It's like, what? I'm paying all this money to be here. Why? And I'll correct myself because I will catch myself doing it. I'm like, why are you doing that?
Right.
This is at home. This is here. I do find myself, by the way, completely side topic, I find myself finding harder and harder to go to football games. And I'm a huge football fan. I'm a fan of the NFL. I'm a fan of college football.
What is it? Is it just you?
Weather, television timeouts, beer, food prices. They're pricing people out of the market and not making it accommodating for the fan anymore. And I'm talking the whole way through.
Yeah.
It's not enough for me. I went to Pitt Penn State. Now, I got in there relatively low cost. I got in for $40. I won't say how I got in for $40, but I got
in
for
$40. I know people were paying hundreds for a ticket.
Yeah, people were paying a lot of money for tickets. Right. So, I mean, if you're buying your ticket for $100, $150 to get into this game, first of all, the final score is 51-6. Awful game as it is. Mm-hmm. So you paid all this money to go watch a bad game. Unless you're a Penn State fan, then it was fantastic for you. But it's raining. It is cold. The wind is moving. And after every touchdown or every change of possession, they're going to TV timeout, and you're waiting 2 minutes. My favorite one is I heard a ref said, timeout taken by Pitt. It's a 30-second timeout. 2 minutes later, they came back to the field after the TV timeout. And I'm sitting there, why am I paying to see this?
I'm
cold, I'm wet, and this game's a blowout. And I paid money to see this.
And you can tell he definitely is a Pitt fan.
Yes.
But no, I agree with the, not so much the weather, because I think that sometimes
it's
fine.
You sign up for it,
And you sign up for it. But the prices, I know that we had an opportunity to potentially purchase several games. We ended up only doing a couple for Steelers because to me, I was like, okay, well, we're going to pay X amount of dollars for the tickets, but then you have to add at least...
If you have a beer...
At least $100 to $200, I think, if there's two of you, if you're both drinking all day...
Parking
and eating,
yep.
You are adding on a couple extra $100 if you want to... And I know you can do it cheaper. I know you can bring in your own food because you can.
Last season you were able to. Really?
I know. I had a friend last season that they actually, if you have your little Ziploc clear,
you can
bring sandwiches.
But you can't bring your person to the game. To me, that is, I understand there are safety concerns, but how are you telling a common item that women carry around all the time, you can't bring this into the game?
I actually was at Stage AE a couple weeks ago for a concert, and the line was so long, we get up to where we actually get in, and they told me my purse. And I knew this, but I thought mine was an okay size, and it wasn't. And I just got so mad, I just threw it away. I threw away my purse. It was an old purse, granted. I didn't.
Yeah.
But still, I was like, I'm not going to go. They're like, walk back to your car. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
No.
Which I understand. I'm all for safety.
But to what extent?
Yeah,
I'm not planting ideas, hopefully, in people's minds. How much more safe can it be? You are literally holding people up in the middle of to get into the stadium. There are thousands upon thousands of people there to make sure nothing happens inside the stadium. Who's to say something is not going to happen outside the stadium?
Yeah,
well, we're all bottled up there. So I understand the security precautions we take. I'm fine with the metal detectors. I'm fine with the scanner. I'm fine with bag inspection, but we're really forcing women now and men to say, okay, you have to bring it in a NFL-certified clear bag, and that's the only way you can get stuff into the game.
Right,
to me, it's just extraordinarily frustrating. And then I'm going in there. I'm paying $8, maybe, if I'm lucky, for a beer.
Yeah.
$8 for a hot dog. that's going to be cold by the time I take it back to my seats. It's so frustrating. Now, the Atlanta Falcons, they play in a dome, but they, new stadium, these are their prices because they realized they were not being friendly to the consumer. $2 for a hot dog, $3 for a slice of pizza, $2 for a bottle of water. Because if you get a bottle of water, they're outrageously priced.
I know.
$5 for a beer.
Wow.
$2 for a Coke.
I never thought I'd be so happy to hear $5 for a beer.
I know.
But wow, that pricing is in effect for this season.
It was in effect last year and in effect this year. And there were some other NFL teams that decided to do it because if they're sitting there, they're complaining, we're not getting enough people to the game. Do something to make it alluring to the fan.
Yeah.
Heat the great hall at Heinz Field so people have a place to go get warm. The Pirates, in my opinion, do it right because in an 82-game season, you have to find a way to bring people to the games. Now, granted, there's not a lot of people going to the games right now, but the Hall of Fame club that is out there, in case you're cold, you can go out there. They have heaters all around the stadium. They have different bars where you can go and get beer. They're being more friendly to the consumer because they understand how do we get people into the game. This is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers, they always thought, man, we've got a waiting list that's huge. People will come here no matter
right.
what.
Which is true. But
I'm telling you, the in-game home experience now with 65-inch high-definition televisions that have every game on that you want. People are playing fantasy football. People are betting on sports legally now. They need to become attractive to the consumers. And that goes for a lot of different things because you mentioned the entertainment industry. I mean, I went to go see, and I understand lines are a part of it, but I went to go see a concert at the Benedum Theater. I waited all of intermission to get one drink because they had two lines.
Yeah, it is tough. And I know we have to wrap this up too, but I don't know if you were sitting when you were at the Benedum, but
I
went to a show, this was actually in Atlanta at a really cool theater there, but I literally, the seats were so small and you could barely sit. I mean, you could, let's just face it, the average American is bigger now than they ever used to be and you could barely sit. I mean, you just could not, it was like being on an airplane. And I'm like, this is just, it's tough. My dad will not go to a sporting event live. He will not. He doesn't like the crowds. He doesn't like the prices of food and drink. He'd rather stay home and watch it.
It's become, I'm telling you, in ticket prices, selling tickets is the chief revenue for a lot of these teams. And unless you're keeping up with the times like the Falcons are, and this will go for any concert venue. Concert may be a little different because it's a once in a while opportunity.
Not an every week or an everyday thing.
You have to be trying to find ways to get people and making it more advantageous to the fans. And the NFL really more than college football, in my opinion, because college people, there's just an atmosphere about it that's more conducive to people coming to games. But the NFL has to be careful because even the Pittsburgh Steelers, diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fans, like myself, love the Steelers, love watching the NFL. I'm hesitant to go to games because I find it super frustrating to sit there, play happens, and then I have to wait 2-3 minutes before the next one. It to me is just a little frustrating. But now that I've got that out of the way.
Now you got that off your chest.
You know where you don't have to worry about lines or inconvenience? The suck-up theater.
That is very true.
It's a nice, intimate setting.
It is beautiful.
The cost is right, and the performances are great.
Mm-hmm. We're going to hear about one of those performances
exactly
coming up
we'll
from
do.
Larry Stock.
He'll join us next. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they're his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
What is it about a pet dog that makes you feel so good? What is it? Unconditional love? Ask for a little in return, a pat here, a snuggle there? You know what I mean. It's this level of comfort that our dog O'Shea offers at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in downtown Butler. Comfort. Love. We've heard so often that when O'Shea is present at a funeral here, she offers a level of comfort that's indescribable. Comfort for the family and comfort for everyone attending. Yes, O'Shea is available for a funeral service, but only if requested by the family. So come on in and meet O'Shea. See why so many folks want her at a funeral. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, and our unique cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Welcome back to the It's Your Turn program, listeners. Tyler Friel and Kayla Moles and in for Dave Malarkey. We've made it to a Friday. Dave will be back on Monday, but right now we turn our attention to our next guests who are live in studio with us. We're here with Larry Stock of the Suck Up Theater at Butler County Community College, as well as Maria Caruso. She is the star of the upcoming performance. Be the correct language there, Larry?
It's very close, yes. Okay. Star and artistic director of the company. Yes.
Okay. So let's dive into this show then. This is coming up the last weekend of September, September 29th.
Right.
Bodyography Contemporary Ballet.
Correct. This will kick off our 17th Performing Arts Series at the Suck Up Theater.
Okay.
And we're very excited to have Maria back again with her company. What did we decide? This is the third year that she is our resident ballet company. But I need to caution. It's not ballet. This is not all ballet.
Well, that's what the picture in the program you gave me. This is not a costume or an ensemble that I would naturally associate with ballet.
Well, there's a story behind this. Okay. So I'm going to let Maria talk to you about all of that because this is pretty exciting what she's got going on here. So.
Yes. So, first of all, thank you guys for having me here. It's a huge honor and privilege to be part of what Larry is producing at the Suck Up, and a great honor to be the resident dance company. So, this is a really kind of a momentous occasion. Last year, I was granted the licensing and the privileges to perform the Martha Graham Lamentation solo. So Martha Graham is the mother of modern dance, and this solo is her iconic solo. It's very seldomly ever performed by an artist outside of the company. And I, in addition to having a long-standing career with Bodyography Contemporary Ballet, I have branched off in the past several years in doing a lot of solo work, and I kind of found myself at a place where I wanted some nourishment as an independent artist, and I had this great privilege to work with the Graham Company in New York, be trained and coached by Denise Vale, the rehearsal director, and I got to perform this beautiful, amazing solo, which was created in 1929, and I got to perform it at the Byam Theater as part of our showcase last year called Doors and Windows, and from that performance, I was also granted an extended license to go ahead and tour with it when I was traveling in Europe, and I had asked the Graham Company if they would extend the license even further, because I felt that it was really important to branch out beyond just the cultural district in Pittsburgh, and to really kind of bring the solo to the community and give it a little bit more of a lifespan, and so they were very, very amenable, and they allowed me the opportunity to perform Lamentation here at the Suck Up. So it's
I'm so glad.
It's a big deal. We're very excited.
I saw it when you performed it earlier this year, and it's just amazing, and I'm so happy you're doing it here at the Suck Up.
I was going to say, Larry, I'm assuming you think this is going to be really well received by the people of Butler.
It is. It's going to be amazing. I mean, people, if you're afraid of modern dance, don't be. Please come out to this, because it's Maria does such an amazing job with not just Lamentations, but her entire company, what she does, the way she instructs, and the way they perform. It is just a beautiful thing to watch, and I think everybody's going to love it.
Maria, can you explain a little bit about what people can expect? Because I think what Tyler was trying to get at is, and I'm sure I don't know how many ballets he's been to. I'm assuming I've been to more.
we'll leave it at that, Kayla.
But I think you would think of, you know, tutus, and you think of point shoes and stuff like that. This is going to be a little different.
Right, and so let me just tell you a little bit about Bodyography. You know, over the past 18 years with the company, I've kind of developed my own movement language, much like Martha Graham did with her Graham technique. And I would say that it is a hybrid of the best of kind of the modern dance vocabularies with the classical ballet undercurrent. So we do utilize the point shoe in some of our works, not all of them. And I have over 100 ballets in my collection. So what I'm bringing to the Suck Up is a piece called Doors and Windows. So the opening of the show is a piece called Break the Verse, which is a contemporary work with a very current composer named Austin Beckman, a young man who I began to work with, who developed a score, and I created an abstract work to that score. So you see the company in a really athletic, beautiful, kind of powerful piece to kind of open the show. Then we kind of, the first act really is a bunch of little concert works. So you're going to see some of our La Roche College dance majors performing. I also chair the performing arts department at La Roche College. We're really proud of the growth of that department. And Larry has allowed us to bring a couple of pieces that the La Roche dancers are going to perform. And in addition to that, we are doing something really unique this year. It's a community piece. So we're going to be working with, I'm going to be creating a piece for some young high school students here in Butler. Yeah. And they are going to have the opportunity to interface with the company and to perform this work on the same stage. So that's what's happening kind of in the first act. In the second act, we open up with Lamentation, which is the Martha Graham solo. And it is about architecture, and it is about grief, the embodiment of grief. I think that when I curated the show Doors and Windows, I paired it with the piece I actually created called Doors and Windows, which is a 45-minute ballet. It is really the expression. It's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland, but it's just the expression of how we overcome adversity in life, how we experience different things, and how we see light at the end of that journey. And what I did was, when I originally created Doors and Windows, I took my time when I did Lamentation and what I learned in New York, and I created almost my own interpretation of Lamentation. So it's really unique to have those two paired together. And while we were on tour, we actually didn't pair them together. We only did that at the Byam Theater. And I think that a lot of people really could understand that here is a piece from 1929, and here is a larger work by a company that embodies an interpretation of that piece of high art. So I think that it's a very cool way to have the audience see something that is historically one of the most profound solos ever created in dance. And if you don't know anything about dance, you're kind of like, wow, there's a woman and she's agonizing in this purple tube. And you definitely feel something. And it is a solo where it is a bit somber, and it's intense. And kind of afterwards, you're a little awestruck. You're kind of like, when you watch it, I know when I perform it, I feel like it takes every ounce of my soul. And then, you know, I wanted to kind of lighten that up by creating this larger work that kind of pairs in after Lamentation, which is more of a narrative. So it is narrated by one of my company artists, and it's really the story of Bodyography, and it's the story of how I've went from, you know, creating works about other people to creating abstract works to creating works that were about my personal influence and expression. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really nice, because you see, oh wow, she's on the bench again. Maybe that's an interesting contrast. And it's taking something really amazing and kind of modernizing it in my own way. And that has led to Bodyography's this season, Bodyography's new collaboration. My work with the Graham Company has been elevated by this creative capacity, and we are going to be welcoming the Graham 2 Company to Pittsburgh to work with Bodyography in April. And it'll be the first time in almost 100 years that the 100-year existence of Martha Graham Dance Company that they will ever have collaborated with a professional dance company. Wow. We're really proud of that.
It's amazing.
It's so interesting. I mean, we have so much culture here in Butler County. It's so nice, Larry, that you've created this performing arts series now in its 17th year.
Right.
That people here don't even have to travel to Pittsburgh. I mean,
exactly.
We have
That's
these
the
world-class
point.
Artists coming here, yeah. And it's such an affordable night out for people and families.
Yes, and they don't have to pay for parking, and it's like right here. It's
yeah.
So convenient. And we go back a long way. She had come in to do a show for me, I think, in the second year I was open. Mm-hmm. And she did an original work with music to the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Pearl Jam. And it was amazing.
Now you're talking Tyler's language.
It was amazing.
That may be the first name that I've recognized.
You've recognized that. Yeah. But anyway, I went down to her studio in Squirrel Hill and watched them when they were performing and said, "Do you think this will work?" I said, "Do it. This is awesome." and then we hadn't worked together for a number of years. And a few years ago, I called her up and said, "Hey, you want to come to a show?" And it's just worked out so
yes,
well, and it's
absolutely.
Just been tremendous, and I couldn't thank Maria enough for everything, for coming up and being part of our series here. It's terrific.
You're such a leader in the cultural landscape of Butler, which I think is really amazing. And actually, I had to share something. It was really last year when we performed. Mm-hmm. I did a piece called Hallelujah, and I came up, and I was kind of I have retired like a I'm like the Brett Favre of dance. I have like retired so many times where it's like I've just decided I'm no longer retiring anymore. I'm gonna keep coming back. I play cameo roles, this, that, and the other. So I got up last year when we were performing, and I was talking to the audience, and I was saying how, you know, I've retired like 10 times. It's unusual for you to see me here, but I'm going to do this solo tonight. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those solos I've toured the world with, and I'm really excited to be here. And I kept just chattering, talking. I got this email from one of the patrons who said, "You know," she's like, "you remind me of someone. I think it was in 19, maybe 68. She's like, "I saw a woman who said the same thing at an afterglow. Her name was Martha Graham." And I thought I never told you this.
That's just
and
awesome.
I thought, wow, that was so crazy. And I didn't know anything about my upcoming event and mm-hmm. upcoming collaboration or my relationship with the Martha Graham Dance Company. She goes, "You sound a lot like this woman. You sound a lot like Martha Graham. I think she retired a few times too."
Oh,
and
my
so
goodness.
It was really great to be in Butler and to be like up there talking and have mm-hmm. someone who said that to me.
That's
and now
cool.
to kind mm-hmm. of move that whole thing forward, and mm-hmm. here we are, fast forward a year, and now I get to perform Lamentation on your stage.
I'm wow. so thrilled for
incredible.
That.
Wow,
that's
what
so
a compliment.
Cool. Yeah, that's so
this
cool.
is awesome.
Very cool.
We're here with Larry Stock, Butler County Community College, director of the Suck Up Theater, and the architect of the Performing Artist Miniseries, which is sponsored by Armstrong. We're also here with Maria Caruso. She is the director of the Bodyography Contemporary Ballet. Let's learn a little bit about you, Maria, in terms of what your background is, you know, how you got involved with this type of ballet and kind of mm-hmm. how you've gotten to this point.
Oh, gosh, we could be here for hours. I'm trying to give you the cliff notes. I'm a small town girl, you know. I grew up in Rural Valley, Pennsylvania, and also spent time in a lot of time in Monroeville between both my parents. And, you know, I found a great deal of solace in dance. I didn't come to dance at a high level until I was probably 12. And I had a really great mentor, Luba Takamoto, who was in Indiana. And I fell in love with ballet. It was like a place where I could find comfort and where I could find that I could express myself. And I fell in love with the pointe shoe. I fell in love with the classics, the tutus and all that. But yet I still had a strong hunger to kind of break outside the box. I think that ballet sometimes is insulated in this world of fantasy, and I think it's beautiful, but it tends to be about swans and fairies
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
and I really wanted to be a little bit more broad with how I express myself, so I got invested in modern dance and jazz and contemporary forms. My teacher was Sue Hewitt, who's still in Indiana, and I am so proud to still work with all of my dance teachers. And I had a very unique situation. I was dancing at a very high level. At age 15, I started college at La Roche College. I was a guinea pig.
You started college at age 15?
Yes. I was a guinea pig in a program that Monsignor Kerr had started and said, you know, maybe we should think about young, talented people in the region and see if they could accelerate academically and artistically. And I ended up taking my junior, senior in high school and my freshman year in college in 1 year. So I graduated high school when I was 16. Wow.
Well, at that point, you've already had accomplished more than I have.
It was a wild ride. I had a lot of support, and I loved La Roche College. I'm very open about sharing this, but you know, my parents were going through a divorce, and I just really wanted to. I wanted to branch out outside of Pittsburgh, so I ended up auditioning for the top 5 programs in the country. I got into Florida State University, and I transferred to Florida State. I got really bored there. I was like, I wanted to go to medical school maybe, or I wanted to get a business degree. So I was like minoring. I was taking chemistry for majors. I was dancing, taking chemistry for majors, and then I was also taking all these business courses.
To which I thought about doing the same thing.
I know, you know. We have so much in common. So I ended up graduating from Florida State when I was 19 with my BFA in dance. And while I was there, I really found that I was developing as a woman. So where I really was conflicted was that, you know, when you're 16, sometimes women don't develop. And as a ballet dancer, you know, I had, you know, become curvier. And it wasn't that I was heavy or overweight in any way, shape, or form, but I didn't really conform to the stereotypical ballet ideals of the time. Mm-hmm. And in the 90s, it was different, you know, and I really struggled. I had an eating disorder. I felt at times I oftentimes think about the dark days when I looked at my reflection in the water of a toilet bowl, and I thought, like, why am I doing this to myself? I'm like trying to kill myself to conform. I had considered having a breast reduction, and you know, one of my mentors came up to me and said, you know, you're gonna find your place one day. And I didn't really realize I had to create it. And so I ended up having an opportunity after I finished my undergrad, or while I was in undergrad, to go to Dance Theater of Harlem. So, you know, a predominantly African-American company in New York, created by the incredible Arthur Mitchell, who was with New York City Ballet. And I felt at home there. I felt like my body was accepted there. And I was in the minority as a Caucasian woman in a company, mm-hmm. you know. But I felt so at home. And I loved the work. I loved the power of it. I loved the reverence for the classical form. But I loved the adaptations that they were doing. I loved the contemporary influence. And that was really powerful for me. And that was really what spawned the notion that I should think about trying to maybe create a company that was about the geography of the body, about taking different bodies, putting them in space, and making it a choreographic responsibility, and also promoting health and wellness. And so from there, I started a company. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I was 19 years old in New York City, having my first show. I think I sold my car. I sold my car, and the ladies from Royal Valley brought cookies. I had a cookie table. I had a Pittsburgh cookie table in Brooklyn for my very first show in New York. I sold my car to do that. And, you know, I was teaching in New York, and I wanted to come back to Pittsburgh. My family, you know, reached out, my father, my mother, and said, we want the youth of Pittsburgh to come back. And I was like, I'm never coming back to Pittsburgh. And you know what? It was the best decision I ever made. So I came back to Pittsburgh, started teaching, still ran my company in New York, and Bodyography was born in New York, and I brought it here to Pittsburgh. We've been here for 18 years. We reside in Gene Kelly's very first dance studio, which I have evolved from a 2,000 square foot studio now to a 10,000 square foot space, and wow. We're building a convertible performance space coming up soon. I now chair the performing arts department at La Roche College. I've written a couple books. I have a dance movement therapy system that integrates a choreographic algorithm for health and healing in the community at large. I have a fitness and strength training system. I'm coming out with a fitness video soon. Get the ballet body without even stepping foot in a ballet class. I'm doing a lot of work as a solo artist and with my amazing company artists. I have an incredible group of people who are not just dancers. You know, I have cultivated a community of educators. We're really broadly out there in the region as dance educators, and you know, and in developing this brand, I also needed some education too. So back up a second, and I did my master's degree, and I got my master's at Carleton University in professional leadership for management for nonprofits, and I did that when I was like 22. I finished that when I was 22. So I got that in there because I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, I really am going to need to learn how to run a business effectively and efficiently. And I had this bizarro, you know, business model that was like, you know, kind of out there, and now is revered. You know, it's accepted because it's about sustainability. And I look to people like Larry, and I look to partnerships in the community to continue to give back. And I think that Bodyography is really, it really is dance for every body. You know, it is the embodiment of movement and how we express that in a variety of different forms. You know, whether it's we're at the hospital or children's hospital, or, you know, we're trying to work with Parkinson's patients, or we're just trying to get people fit and feeling good in their own skin, or we're performing something where, you know, on stage where we can impact an audience member and share an experience with them, you know, whether I'm sharing that with a student at my school. I also have a school, Bodyography Center for Movement, I forgot about that, where I have a college preparatory program that interfaces with La Roche College, where high school kids get credit for college. So, sorry, I forgot that facet. There's so
it's
many
easy
facets.
To forget because she's busy.
Sorry.
Busy.
Yes, busy lady.
My shoes haven't come untied today, so I feel like I'm fine.
It is so interesting to hear about your background, though, and I hope that young performers and young dancers in the Butler community are listening, because it's so interesting. I have to ask you, I know we don't have too much more time, but I like that you said you were working with local dance students at the performance that's going to be at BC3. How did that come about?
So,
well, we talked about this, and we talked about it's about doing, we didn't pass years, we did a master class.
Okay, right.
Like the day of the show, and Maria would come up, and we'd bring local dancers in from the local dance studios. And I think you said, what if they performed with us?
Yeah, so why aren't they performing? Like, why are we not doing? I'm always like big and broad. Like,
go
when
big.
I'm in the, go big or go home. Like, I don't have time for that. You know, like when I come into a community, I just feel like you have to engage the community. And I think Bodyography, that's what's so unique about us too, is that you kind of asked that question about the classical component, like tutus. Like, the work that we do, you see those influences. You may not see the tutus, or you may see one that's like purple and different and a little bit more abstract, but you know, the reverence for the classical form and all the genres of traditional dance are there, and we teach that, and I think that it gives students a perspective. And I think that oftentimes what I recall when I was younger and I was in Rural Valley is that, you know, it was a big deal to like have to travel down to the city and to go see a show. And I think that what Larry's doing is incredible. And over the years, he's brought all these amazing dance companies and amazing artists here. And, you know, I would have given anything. I mean, I remember my mom, like when Bill T. Jones came into town, this dance company, it was like, I had to go to the master class. And so I started seeing such a strong response to us doing master classes that I couldn't help but wonder, you know, how can we further that impact by having them be a part of the experience? So the past couple of years when we've been on tour, I have two other companies, Bodyography Charlotte and Bodyography Contemporary Ballet 3, which are the alumni artists of Bodyography who still perform with us once a year. So when we were in Charlotte, we started to engage the kids in the community. And the parents were even saying, like, wow, like, my child didn't necessarily know. We've gone to shows. But to see what that looks like from just learning what a professional dancer does, to watch them on the side of the stage, to be saturated in the experience, I think it can be really powerful and life-changing. I think a lot of people really enjoyed the fact that we are a healthy company, you know? We're not sitting on the side, you know, we're maybe, you know, enjoying a chocolate bar, and maybe maybe not, you know, we're not eating carrot sticks.
Right,
you know, we're healthy.
Right.
Chocolate bar, let's I don't want to promote the fact that we're like chocoholics or anything like that. But, we are about embodying the healthy body and thinking about dance from a healthy perspective. And if we can influence the youth of Butler, and if we can impact their perspectives, I think that would be great. And as I ask the kids to raise their hand, how many of you guys have been to a performance downtown, you know, or to
right,
the
yeah.
And some of them, they had been to performances.
They had been to performances.
But not as...
They weren't as immersed.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And so, it's about accessibility.
Yeah.
And that is great. So she came up and auditioned some students from local studios. And we have how many that are performing?
Eight.
Wow.
Eight dancers awesome. Are performing with us.
Well, Larry, unfortunately, our time, it has blown by.
Okay.
Let's get, if you could give us the
tickets
ticket
information. Yes, please. You please call and get tickets, 724-284-8505. Again, 724-284-8505. Please leave a message. We are not Time Life. We do not have operators standing by 24/7. We will return your call. And you can also go on our website 24/7 at bc3.edu/suckup-theater.
Oh, may I add one more
thing?
One last
word.
After the show, we are going to be gathering. We'd love to interface with our patrons. So I would love to meet anybody and everybody that comes to see us, and so would the artists. So
afterwards,
please awesome. Feel free to stay around and
right.
introduce hang yourself out. And hang
yes,
out.
Yes, right.
Bodyography, awesome. Contemporary Ballet, Saturday, September 29th, 8 o'clock at the Suck Up Theater. Larry, Marisa, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you,
thank
Tyler.
You for
appreciate
us.
It.
We're going to be spoken to Deutsch next as Jack Cohen and Fred Caesar join us to talk about their recent trip to Mühlhausen, Germany. That's coming up on It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM.
Great products at greatly reduced prices is exactly what you'll find at Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet. You'll find many of your favorite name brand grocery items, as well as fresh produce, frozen and refrigerated foods, and much more. All items 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Sharp Shopper has been bringing bargains to Pennsylvania communities for 30 years. Be sure to visit their new Butler store location in Point Plaza. Sharp Shopper Grocery Outlet, a new way to shop, a new way to save.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 South of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Welcome back to the Friday edition of It's Your Turn, listeners. Tyler Friel and Kayla Molzan in for the vacationing Dave Malarkey. And this is a fun way to wrap up the week, Kayla, as we are talking a little bit of our... Well, first of all, we're going to talk to our first ever Butler Radio foreign correspondent.
International correspondent.
International correspondent. We have finally had an affiliate office in Germany. His name is Fred Caesar. He is the your board member of the Friends of Saxenburg, or president, rather, Friends of Saxenburg, and then a board member for the Saxenburg Historical Restoration Committee. And we're also talking with Jack Cohen. He's the president of the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Happy Friday. Thanks for coming.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Once Fred begins to speak, our listeners might recognize him because, as Tyler said a couple weeks ago, we had a report from him almost every day for 7 days while he was on a part of a goodwill trip to Germany. And I think I'll have Jack Cohen from the Tourism Bureau kind of set the stage for us. A lot of people are like, well, what does Butler County and Mühlhausen, Germany have to do with each other other than being thousands and thousands of miles apart? This is a exchange that happened quite some time ago.
It has. That 10 years ago, the two communities got together and talked about a sister city relationship. And the relationship has the tie with John Roebling. And for those that don't know out there, John Roebling was the gentleman who invented the wire rope and built many bridges. And in Cincinnati, it's called the Roebling Bridge. Mm-hmm. And in Pittsburgh, you know, there's a plaque on the Smithfield Street Bridge honoring him. But the wire rope created many, many bridges all around the globe. So his invention, made here in Saxenburg, started when he grew up in Germany. And he decided to move out of Germany at that time frame when he was a child or a young man. He decided it was time to leave the country. It was a disorder. And he came and settled here in Saxenburg, Pennsylvania.
when you read on the Wikipedia page of Mühlhausen, mm-hmm. as I do all my research for anything on Wikipedia, contrary to what my teachers say, John Roebling is listed as a famous, celebrity. He's a famous person mm-hmm. from Mühlhausen. And so there's obviously a significant connection there between Saxenburg and Mühlhausen. And is there some, I don't want to say memorial to him, but is there a tribute to John Roebling in Mühlhausen?
Yes, there is. In the town square, there is a statue of Roebling in Mühlhausen. It's not a very tall statue, by the way, but it stands there in the square. And just around the corner on the street, which is named Roeblingstrasse, is the building where he grew up, and his father was a tobacconist in town.
Okay.
Is it a small town? How many people live there?
There are about 15,000 that live in the town now.
Okay. No. So bigger than the borough of Saxenburg.
Oh, yeah.
yes, very much so. But they are walking the streets. I guess we should say a lot of the Germans there do speak English. And walking the streets, they were very nice. We told them we were from Saxenburg or from Butler County, and they said, Saxenburg, you know? And I said, yes, and Roebling. And so, but it was interesting. One young lady tapped me on the shoulder. I was taking some pictures of the statue. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm taking pictures of John Roebling. And she said, do you know much about him? I said, yes, ma'am. And so I started telling her about Saxenburg and all that. So I was educating her about Saxenburg. She was educating me about growing up in Mühlhausen, where Roebling was known.
I was going to ask about the language barrier. I didn't know if that would be much of, you know, I think any time when people consider making a trip over to Europe, what that language barrier, mm-hmm. if there was any difficulties there, or how did that process work, Jack?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you think about, we don't speak German that often.
No.
But when you go to Germany and any other country on the globe, most people speak English mm-hmm. today. And it's funny, I got the fortunate opportunity to go to China. And I went there and the same thing. And I saw a class of children walking with their teacher in China. And it's I couldn't believe how little the kids were. And I asked her, I said, how old are the children? She said, 3. We start school at 3 years old. And I said, but they're all speaking English. She says, yes, we teach English. They learn Chinese at home.
Wow.
And that's why we're behind them.
That may be why. Think about that educational opportunity. Right.
So this sister city relationship has been going on for 10 years. Like Jack said, this is the first time that a contingent from Butler County Tourism made the trip over there. Has that been in the works for some time?
Well, you know, I got to go 2 years ago. As 10 years have gone by, every year, either the folks from Saxenburg go over to Germany to Mühlhausen, or the folks from Mühlhausen come here to Saxenburg. Mm-hmm. And so it's usually the elected officials. And I thought, you know, as I went, I was so fortunate to go, I thought, my goodness, we need to open this up to the people that live there and let them know what a wonderful place we have, as they have a beautiful place in Mühlhausen. Mm-hmm. Remember, that was old East Germany. And so as the wall came down, so did all those fundamentals of that time frame. And those folks there love the opportunity to go out and visit and tour and feel part of the globe. And it's a really great opportunity for our community.
Who decided who went on this trip from the Tourism Bureau? I know we had a lot of questions about, well, how did they get on it, and did they have to pay their own way, or, you know, a lot of people had questions about that.
Everybody that went paid their own way. A lot of those folks, you could tell from who they were parts of tourism. And so we had the newspaper. We think that's important. Mm-hmm. We had Fred talking about radio. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, me as the director of tourism. But the other folks that went all were tourism-based folks, a restaurateur, a hotelier, a bed and breakfast, a wedding venue. All those types of people came, and they truly were ambassadors for us. We knew them. We knew they could be those types of individuals mm-hmm. that could come, learn, listen, invite, speak, all those things that we needed to have. They were all there.
Be a good representation.
They were
of
wonderful.
Butler County.
That group melded so well together. It was like they were a family. It truly was.
Fred, tell me about the flight over. You flew from Pittsburgh International to Frankfurt?
Yes, we did. It was a great flight. Condor Airlines was terrific, and I would recommend it to anybody to fly to Frankfurt. It was very, very good flight. You left here about 5:30 in the evening, got over there at 7:30 in the morning. We started our trip right away from there.
And don't forget, there's a 6-hour time change there too.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did you feel when you landed?
We all got a nap. We all got some sleep on the flight, and we got meals, dinner, and a little snack for breakfast and everything. But you get to sleep on the flight overnight, and they lower the lights and stuff, and it was really nice. And we got recharged real quick.
I got to be honest. I didn't sleep at all. Uh-oh. I watched 3 full-length movies the whole way over and loved every minute of it.
Well, your trip started the second you touched down, right? You had to get on a bus to go to
Mulan. Yeah, we started right away. We got on the Autobahn, and I will tell people my impression of the Autobahn was being on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. You were on a multi-lane highway, traveling through areas that looked very similar to Pennsylvania, with the hills and the mountains and small towns, mm-hmm. industry forming and all that. Even saw KFC and McDonald's signs
really?
Along the way.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Our first stop was at Burger King.
Yeah.
Of all places. Really embracing the culture.
Yeah, I knew we felt at home.
Yeah, we didn't know if it was a German king or an American king, but it was Burger King. And then, well, later on in Mulhausen, there was a Subway shop, and few of us did walk into it. But the interesting thing is the sign was on the wall. They were English first, German second.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Wow, something that would never happen over here.
Well, you guys touched on it, and so anytime, I'm a big food guy. I love food. I love trying different food, beer as well. So I want to ask about what the food was like in Germany. Was there a particular meal that interested you? Was there something that stood out, or did you guys just hit up the Burger Kings and Subways the whole time?
No. We certainly immersed ourselves in the food and the beer. And you have to.
Yeah.
Because you're there. We were there a week. And in a week's time, we ate in different restaurants and different hotels with restaurants. And anywhere we could, we tried the different delicacies and authentic German food. That's the fun part of Germany. You know, you're trying different beers. Mm-hmm. You're trying different foods. You try different things that you don't normally see here in the United States. And I don't think that we had one location where we didn't enjoy it.
Really?
No, I agree. And I would recommend the outdoor settings where we were.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they were very nice, very attractive in the town's squares. We were in Erfurt and Eisenach, and everything was really nice. They have outdoor festival areas and everything. We enjoyed all of those stops very much.
We even went to a medieval dinner.
Yeah.
And medieval for them, I think, is probably from the year like 1,000 or 900. I mean, we're talking medieval.
Right, right.
The first thing they did, they came out and made us all wear bibs that fit over your head and down over your back.
Probably
and I'm thinking,
idea.
What are we getting into? You know, it was really a lot of fun.
Is the warm beer a thing?
We didn't have any warm beer.
No. I never knew that.
You know,
There was always a rumor that I heard that they serve it
at room temp.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard that, but I think everybody said, well, that used to be.
Okay.
But not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've had nice cold beers, lots of different types, and some were better than others, but it's the same thing here. You think about what we have here in Butler County, you go down Main Street, I think you can hit 3 or 4 different brew houses in a four-block area today.
We've done
really
it.
Nice.
Tyler and I have done it.
Yes.
We do it every weekend.
We do have that beer tour now. We're loving
do.
That.
Yeah. I've got my card.
Good. We've had like 9 people already finish their card, come in, and they get a really cool gift.
Well, I'm not drinking at that particular pace right now, but I'm checking them off as we get
really
through.
Cool.
You know, another thing were the breads. We all talked about
everything.
Bread.
You couldn't believe the texture, the flavor, and the smells of those great breads in Germany.
Yeah, and the morning breads were really
phenomenal.
Different than what you get in this country.
Yeah.
Are the meal times or the meal traditions the same? I know in Italy their lunch is the big thing, dinner not so much. Is it pretty similar in Germany to here?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, it's unusual because you do go to other countries and you'll have your big meal in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't the case. There it was like what we call normal.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So the time frames were pretty much the same. But you could eat and drink all day long. And we certainly were too busy touring. But I think most people seem to be doing that.
Fred, I know you had an itinerary each day. What was one of your favorite days or favorite things, if you can even bottle it down? I know there were so many different things you visited.
Well, there were highlights every day. I mean, we visited medieval castles. We were in a old fortress area. But I think one of the highlights to all of us was that we were honored to participate in the Kermes parade on Sunday in that was part of the festival in Mühlhausen, and we got to walk with the dignitaries from Mühlhausen and in the parade at the lead of the parade. And I will tell you, they had three stands where they announced who was in the parade. We got applause every time that they said that there were people coming from Saxenburg in America. We walked along, people wanted to shake our hands. We were one person in our group. We kept passing around an American flag, but it was really a great experience. I think, and I think we were great representatives of our country and of our area. And also, we were handing out cards to remind them of Butler County and to mm-hmm. look up and know mm-hmm. where we were from. So, but that was a highlight.
The parade, did it mark a holiday over there or a special occasion?
It's a festival. Okay. Several years ago, they brought together their. They used to have a lot of festivals at all the, what they call
kind of like what we do here in Butler County. Every weekend there's another festival.
But they kind of put it all together in one day, and they have all the different, they call them parishes, have participate in the parade. It's a, I think for us it was a mile and a half route around town, mm-hmm. And then there were bands and different floats. Every one of the floats stopped. The mayor for Mühlhausen, he would shake hands with the parish leader and then participate with the bands and the floats. But it was a great occasion. And then there was a festival that went on for the rest of the day around town, and the spirit was really great. But it kind of does remind you of Butler County with how we all celebrate on an ongoing basis.
Well, we have the big Butler Fair.
Yeah.
Well, this is their
mm-hmm.
big Butler Fair mm-hmm. in Germany.
Okay.
And it's kind of interesting because they do bring amusement rides in. Mm-hmm. And they have the community celebrates for a week.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I think it was 140 years ago is when the mayors decided we've got to do this because we can't continually every week go out to another party. And so all the
Butler County is proving that theory wrong.
22 different communities got together and does this. Yeah. And there were 15,000 people watching the parade.
Right. Wow.
We got to see everyone.
Yes, we did.
I watched Fred shake hands with a lot of little kids.
I shake him,
and talking
yes.
to every. I mean, it was yep. really, no, really a special time.
No. And the other thing is because you're walking a main street that has old buildings that have second floors, it was neat how people opened the windows and they were waving from the second floor down. And, and all that, too. Don't get me wrong. But it was terrific. So you didn't just watch the crowd. You had to look mm-hmm. up and wave at the folks. They expected you to wave at them as well.
Architecture-wise, I was what popped out to you? You know, when was this town built? I mean, it seemed when I was looking at some of the pictures you guys had taken, it seems really, really neat.
It is amazing. There's buildings there from the year 900 and earlier, and they're using them today. What we would thought of probably a couple hundred years ago to tear down, they fix. Mm-hmm. They remodel them. They're beautiful. We were so fortunate to see all this wonderful building and great architecture. Mm-hmm. Just really beautiful.
Yeah, it's very ornate buildings. If you look up, I mean, everywhere you see little statues or gargoyles or things mm-hmm. like that. Very, very ornate. And painted. I mean, multicolored paint.
And that's what stood out to me when I was looking at the photo. Sometimes you look at, you know, maybe New York or, you know, just any city, and it all kind of blends together and all the architecture kind of looks the same. But in Mühlhausen, it just seemed like it was a variety of different colors.
You know,
the whole
and
palette.
That's so true. But the biggest thing we saw, and I tailored this because I wanted to make sure that all of our folks that came got the opportunity to see how much pride the communities have in their properties. They water the flower baskets above the windows, below the windows, around the windows, the gardens, the front of their buildings. We witnessed people in the early mornings would be out there washing their windows, sweeping their sidewalks, mm-hmm. and making sure when they opened their businesses that people knew they had very much a lot of pride in all of their business. It was phenomenal.
Fred, I know you sent us a photo back, which I believe was Saxonburg's mayor and the mayor of Mühlhausen shaking hands. And it I believe it was from what we would think of as like a city council meeting or something like that. Can you talk about what that was?
Oh, that happened when the two mayors met, and they extended the sister city agreement for another 10 years.
Okay.
They exchanged gifts, and they have now, we've got the extension for another 10 years for the sister city program. So that was what that was, and that was in the one of the buildings that we were in as well was the old town hall, and it dates back to I think 1000 AD. But it was beautiful and ornate. The painted ceilings inside, I mean, the room where they did the signing and all that has old drawings on the walls, painted ceilings. It is just absolutely beautiful. And we had another special occasion that we got to go down into the vault, into the archives. It's in a locked, secure area. Very special keys had to be used to get into it, and we went down into the archives that were in the basement of the town hall, and they were pulling out documents from over the centuries, and it is just fantastic. Actually, one of the pieces there is one of the original documents that was signed by the king.
955. Oh, that was goodness. The year.
Yeah, signed. And it was interesting. We
they
learned
just
one,
pull it out and get yeah, you touch yeah, it.
Yeah, oh, no,
well, you
touch
know
it.
The guy that runs that archive room actually had gloves on.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, some of the pieces were still parchment.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and handwritten in parchment with ink.
Right.
But he always said, pick a book, and I'll read an excerpt from it.
Yeah.
And somebody picked a certain book, and he opened it up at the year 1302. And he started reading from it.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting what he read.
Right.
He said that there was a special tax levied. Even back then, the Jews were persecuted. And if you were Jewish, you had to pay a special tax to own a home. You know, just because you're Jewish, you got to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. And you know, we think that maybe that started in during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these things show you that this happened all the way back in 1302.
Wow.
So it kind of shined the light on our group that it wasn't something that just popped up in the,
in
the 30s and 40s. It really happened a long, long time ago.
Jack, where do you hope this program goes from here? Ever
oh,
a
my
foreign
gosh.
Exchange?
You know, I'm on the flight home, and I'm already thinking
I'm sure
ahead, right?
Did. I'm sure you
so
did.
So I'm thinking, how cool was this? And how wonderful the exchange was. You know, we now have a direct flight coming from London. Now, granted, it would be a whole lot easier to get around in London, but I went over there to help get that flight to come to Pittsburgh. So as I toured that and had the opportunity to speak at the embassy to our friends in England, and then, of course, BA stood up and, you know, British Airways and said, yeah, we'd love to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should go there. I think we should go there and say, you know, you have this magnificent city. It's like a New York, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere. It could swallow Butler County up in 10 seconds. But it is amazing to see the beauty and the history and the wonderful ties that we have already with London, England. I think about that now.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I was telling my wife that last night. I said, you know, and then we look at China. You know, we've been trying to develop that sister city relationship with Haiyang, China, because of Westinghouse built their nuclear plants mm-hmm. for them. And so that is finished, and the nuclear plants just opened up a couple of months ago. But they're still there. We have a lot of Americans there that are you know, making sure that they know how to run their plants, mm-hmm. make sure they're safe, make sure all those issues. And we're still trying to reach out. There's actually a gentleman who moved to Pittsburgh. He's from China, and he's on his way back there, and he's going to meet with the politicals in Haiyang, China, to extend that opportunity to become a sister city with Cranberry Township, who wanted to do this in the beginning. So we've tried to make those connections. We even got a letter back. Oh, we're not ready yet. We're not ready, you know. But now this was a city that China built to move some population to an area that wasn't populated.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're doing that. So great opportunities are out there. You never know where we go.
Go ahead, Fred.
I'd like to add on the German trip that, and I mentioned this to Jack as we were traveling around the country. I think people from Butler County would enjoy going to the Mühlhausen, Erfurt, and Eisenach. Especially, I would recommend our Lutheran friends and also Jewish friends and Catholic to consider religious trips there, because we saw magnificent old churches, medieval churches, and Martin Luther was certainly all over it. And there's certain churches that have where he was he preached or he studied, and then there was the one castle where he translated the New Testament into German. And then the same place was where St. Elizabeth, who's canonized by the Catholic Church, she was there. We are actually the very interesting story about her. She was forced to get married at 14. Her husband died when she was 20. She sent her children off and then became involved with churches and charity. That's very well documented there as well.
Don't forget, she died at the age of 24.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I would say that there is a number of places where you could go for that. And if you're a music lover, you have to go to Eisenach for Johann Sebastian Bach.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah, the museum, it is one of the finest musical museums I've ever seen. It'll top some in this country.
I would agree. Yeah. I mean, you could sit there and you could put a headset on and listen to his music, and I am telling you, you will fall asleep. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most beautiful museums music-wise I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just think about that history. And if you love classical music, and I don't care if you're into rap or if you're into rock or if you're into country, you listen to classical music, and it is a form of music that will actually make you relax. It is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, they do a concert so many times a week, and we were very fortunate that they played some of the historical instruments with some of the Bach songs. It was just great. And to see some of where Bach had played the organs, as we were traveling around, he traveled around and played the organ in many of the churches. And now we didn't hear in one of the organs, but boy, they were beautiful organs.
Jack, I know that some people might not realize, but Butler County is a global county. I mean, we have several companies, Westinghouse, Oberg, MSA, just to name a few.
Well, now the Butler Radio Network with our chief foreign correspondent.
Butler Radio Network. But, I mean, in all honesty, there's a lot going on here, and I think that gets lost a little bit in first-time residents.
Yeah, it really does. You know, people don't think about it. We talk about, think about the grocery chain, right? You know, they're based here. We have a big distribution center in Butler County, and everybody knows, come on, tell me, guys, you all should know what the name of that grocery chain is.
Aldi.
Bingo.
There you go.
Based in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and here they are. They picked Butler County to put their distribution center. Mm-hmm. So you think about how these things transpire. There is no more of countries overseas. We're one big happy family, folks. Mm-hmm. It's too easy to get around these days. And, you know, we just heard, if you wanted to go to Germany today and didn't want to fly on Condor and you're looking for a more inexpensive way to go, WOW Airlines has a special running right now for $99. You could leave Pittsburgh, you go into Iceland, and from Iceland you take the flight over into Frankfurt. You're there for $99. Mm-hmm. How could you not go?
Right. It's so much smaller now. The world is just so much smaller than it ever used to be.
That $99 has kind of left me speechless. Now I'm sitting here going, $99 is all it takes to go to Germany.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That's wild. Mm-hmm.
It's a special for the fall. Yeah. It's just, wow. I saw that yesterday, and we're actually going to be at an event, Butler County Tourism, again on the road. But one of our sales folks is going to be at a travel show in London, England. And she got a flight today for $99.
Wow.
Can't beat it.
Well, again, Fred, thank you so much for being our correspondent over there. Anything else you'd like to add? I just know you loved your trip from start to finish.
No, I did. It was fantastic. I appreciate the invite by Jack for this trip, and it was a great experience. And I again recommend anyone to go there. I had fun reporting for you every day, you know, I would put my notes together a morning for us. It was early morning for you all, mm-hmm. and send them. And I hope you enjoyed them. But it was a fun time to do that, and I'd go back on a dime.
Well, Jack, I'm sure that you will be back, and you'll be other places too, and you'll be here talking about them soon.
Yeah, I think this is the fun part of our job. You know, we get to see the places we want people to come from and visit with us. Mm-hmm. And each year we do a special dinner. It's called our Toast of Tourism Dinner. Well, next year our Toast of Tourism Dinner is going to be about this trip that we took. And we're going to have some very special guests to come and speak to everybody in the group. So it'll be a lot of fun, and we hope to see you all there.
And real quick, I mean, we didn't touch on it, but you talked about it before we went on air here, is that it is a reverse factor where you're hoping to get people from Germany to come to Butler County.
Absolutely. And we actually had a great tour guide. His name was Randall, and Randall was a U.S. military man, and he was stationed in Germany and decided that he wanted to move there. And he did, and now he gives tour guides. He's a really great tour guide, and his company is based as Eisenach. Okay. And so we're working with them, and hopefully he's going to be selling our product to bring people back here to Butler County.
Awesome. I would add that the tourism groups that we met with in all the cities, they really are fantastic people and very, very, very knowledgeable about the communities. And I think their interest in our area was great, too. But we met some very, very nice people involved in tourism.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we really appreciate you making the time to come in here. Had a great conversation. I mean, that half hour flew by just like that. So he's Fred Caesar, Friends of Saxonburg, and a board member for the Saxonburg Historical Restoration Committee, as well as our chief foreign correspondent for WISR. And he's Jack Cohen, president of the Butler County Tourism and Convention Bureau. Gentlemen, thanks again for coming in.
Our pleasure. And don't forget, Fred's on the board of directors for the Butler County Tourism, too.
That, too. Yeah. So,
he's a busy guy.
Man of many titles. Okay, Ella, it's been fun this week. Dave Malarkey will be back in on Monday, so we'll talk to you, the listeners, that is, whenever Dave takes off again.
Absolutely. Thanks all right. so much.
Hey, guys, have a great weekend, and do you want to have us play us
a
off with a tune
off.
Here, Fred?
Little Bach music to rest by.
Have a good weekend.
That's perfect. I love it. Love it.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 4444. The pick 3, 635. The pick 4, 0801.